So let me just see whether that works. Fantastic. So thank you very much for inviting me, and thank you also for putting this really wonderful workshop together. So I certainly learned a lot. I'm very happy that I could discuss with a lot of you. And if we are asking questions about quantum black holes in the sky, we have heard a lot of talks about how to replace black holes with some more exotic objects or objects that are very well motivated from string theory considerations. And I want to take a slightly different stance, where we say, okay, if we have a candidate model of quantum gravity and we try to study that in the infrared limit, that will not necessarily replace our black holes, but it will modify our equations of motion. And that is what I want to talk about today, and I want to focus on a very particular modification of general relativity, which involves a coupling to the Gauss-Bonne invariant, which is essentially a curvature squared term, and a coupling to a Dilaton field. And originally, so the black holes in this theory are known to have hair, must have hair, in fact. And originally, I wanted to talk about how to form these black holes. However, as of the beginning of this week, so since Monday, I have new results where we look at a black hole binary system in this particular theory. So it's very preliminary. It's work done together with Leonardo Gualtieri, Paolo Pani, and Tomas Sotirio. And I decided to talk about that, and I invite you to ask questions or spark the discussion a little bit. So why should we look at modified gravity at all? We've had a number of talks where we said, okay, where we learned how well GR is tested, not only with tabletop or solar system experiments, pulsar experiments, but also with gravitational waves. At the same time, there's still some tension, both in cosmology, where we know from observations that we have to have an additional matter component that we don't really know what it is, which we call dark matter. So Chet Hanna talked about primordial black holes as one candidate for these dark matter particles. There are other ideas of where you can have very light fundamental fields serving as dark matter candidates that we can actually use and probe for using black holes. And my focus will be on the second part. So in high energy physics, we know GR is not renormalizable, it's not UV complete, so it's not a good candidate for quantum gravity. So there must be something more fundamental out there that we would like to try and search for. So we already had very, very nice talks on Wednesday by Kent Jagi and Katerina, talking about gravitational wave-based tests of GR and trying to look for modifications thereof. So let me just try to raise two points that I think are very, very important. So the first question is, where have we actually tested GR? And this is in the in-spiral phase. Essentially, all the models that are out there explicitly, either for specific theories or in a parameterized version, are for the in-spiral part. And that is something where we could do most of the tests so far. The other part where we have theoretical predictions is the ring down part. And I guess once the signal to noise ratio in this ring down part gets better, we can do ring down tests of GR as well. There is, however, a big question mark about the merger regime, where we essentially know very, very little of how the black hole dynamics would change and how the signal would look like. And even if you say, well, okay, you know, I'm happy with my parameterized models, you still need information from this nonlinear strong gravity regime to calibrate your models. So I think it's really important to try and understand what's going on here. And let me just say that there are a few works, mostly in scalar tensor theory, which is a kind of simplest extension to GR, where people have done numerical simulations of black hole binaries or neutron star binaries. Then the group in Caltech had a paper out where they looked at what's called dynamical Schoen-Simon theory. So it's a higher curvature correction that's parity violating. And then the group here looked at the general Einstein-Maxwell-Dilaton model. But that's essentially it. So anything more complicated, more involved, we essentially don't know. And the other problem is that if we want to study this regime, you essentially need to perform numerical simulations, which means you need to tell the computer what to calculate. So you need to specify a model. So there's not really a parameterized model out there that would capture all the interesting modifications. So you essentially have to pick your favorite. And of course, there are so many suggestions and proposals out there of how you can modify gravity that you know, every person who thinks that there should be a modification will tell you a different favorite model. So I will focus on one which I think is well motivated, which is what I said before, called Einstein-Dilaton-Gauss-Bonne gravity. So here's the action written down. And the idea is essentially that it comes from a string theory, a compactification of string theory down to four dimensions. And it's the lowest order term. So essentially, you have here your Einstein-Hilbert term. And then the correction is this Gauss-Bonne invariant, which is this particular combination of Riemann squared, Ricci tensor, and Ricci scalar squared, together with a coupling function f of phi, where this f of phi usually is a Dilaton coupling e to the phi. So if you take this model, your equation of motion will look like this. So you have your Einstein tensor, your energy momentum tensor of the scalar field, and then you will get a correction here. This curly g is essentially a curvature times the derivative of the scalar field. And then you will get a wave or an equation for the scalar field that where you source it by the Gauss-Bonne invariant itself. So that's the model. That's how it looks like. And as I just said, so why looking at this particular one? And one is that it's in some way motivated by string theory models. So this coupling constant that I wrote down is actually related to alpha prime over the string length squared. Then the other issue is that if you say, OK, you probably have some modifications of GR, so it's probably, so, and especially for these higher curvature corrections, they will probably show up in the strong gravity regime. And if you want to, so that's why there may be some hope, unless there is this conspiracy, there may be some hope that we can look for them using black holes and gravitational waves. And the other issue that I think was raised yesterday at some point is a mathematical one. So can we actually model these theories? Are they mathematically well posed? Well, they're second order, so people for a long time thought there may be a good chance. However, Giuseppe Papalo had a paper a couple of weeks ago where he showed that the equations of motion that I just showed you, complemented by a generalized harmonic gauge, are only weakly hyperbolic. So it's probably not good enough, although that is a very gauge-dependent statement. So it will, however, have good chances to be well posed if you treat it as effective field theory by expanding it in this coupling constant alpha GB that I showed before. And the other thing that's interesting and that I wanted to emphasize as well is that the properties of compact objects in this theory can be quite different. So let's just contrast scalar tensor theories and this higher curvature correction series. So in standard scalar tensor theory, where you have a modification with a massless scalar field, no Hare theorem still applies. So you know that the black holes that you have are still the same that you have in GR. And neutron stars can develop scalar Hare if they undergo something that's called spontaneous scalarization. The opposite is true for these quadratic gravity models. So if you remember the equation that I showed before for the scalar field, they're up here. Oh, yep, here's something. So there you can actually show that your scalar field, that your black hole has to have here, because essentially what you're looking at is a scalar field sourced by the curvature. So you do develop a scalar hair around these objects. So times probably this function f of phi here that I omitted, but that's the crucial thing here. And at the same time, Kent Yagi and collaborators showed that neutron stars, at least to leading order in an R or in 1 over R, do not have scalar hair. So in some sense, you can say now, OK, I have compact objects, they have really orthogonal properties. So if I were ever able to see hints for additional radiation channels, and at the same time I know what my objects are, you may be able to really support or discard an entire class of theories. And I think that's very exciting, and I think that's why we should also try to understand the dynamics and evolution of compact objects in these modified gravity theories. So let me just mention a few points. So imagine now you have a binary of these black holes that do have scalar hair around it. So what would you expect to happen? So say they in spiral. So because they have scalar hair, you would expect additional scalar radiation, which at the same time, because some of the energy of the system goes into that scalar radiation, will change the in-spiral dynamics, and the black holes will probably in-spiral faster. So you will probably have a phase shift in your theory, and you will modify your gravitational wave signal, which are the first two points that I mentioned here. Other things that people have studied are geodesics around these solutions, showing that there's a shift in the ISCO radius, for example. And just one last point, which I think is also interesting. So people have looked at constructed solutions numerically and found that you can actually exceed the standard care bound. I think it's only by a little, so I don't think it would yet be testable with things like the Event Horizon Telescope, but again, something to think about in the future. Okay, so far for my introduction. Now let's go a bit more into details. So I mentioned before that this Einstein-Dirac-Angles-Born gravity has been shown to be not well posed with a generalized harmonic gauge, but we are taking this effective field theory approach. So essentially what we're doing is to say, okay, our metric is going to be some background metric plus some correction, and our scalar field is the correction, the reason being that if you, let me just write down the action again. So what we have in the action is essentially the Einstein-Hilbert term plus coupling constant f of phi, so e to the phi Gauss-Bonnet term, right? Plus the kinetic term for the scalar field. Now, if you expand that for phi, your leading order will be a constant, which means that the whole term would only be topological. That's why the scalar field essentially starts at the first order. And if you do that, you find that to leading order, so at alpha to the zero, you essentially just have GR, and in this case, vacuum GR. So to zero's order, you just have GR, you don't have any modification, and your scalar field is absent. So it's essentially a constant that you can put to zero. And only at first order, the corrections for the tensor field equations still do not enter, they only enter at second order in the coupling. So what you get here is what I mentioned before. So you get essentially the field equation for the scalar field, which looks like this, box phi sourced by the Gauss-Bonnet invariant. And in all what follows, I will drop all superscripts here just to make it a little bit more readable. And one more thing that I wanted to mention our black hole solutions, because that's what I will compare my results against later. So people have gone out and constructed solutions for the theory, either in full or in a small coupling limit, and in many cases also assuming a small spin. So as I just said, so to the zeroth order, there is essentially no modification to the GR solution. So if you want to look for rotating black holes, you would just have your Kerr solution, and phi would be a constant, which means it would not contribute for the reasons that I mentioned over here. At first order, there's still no modification to the metric, but you do find a non-trivial scalar field profile. And I should emphasize that actually discussing this Kandiaghi here gave me this particular form, which is only limited to the small coupling limit, but is valid for arbitrary spin. So your scalar field essentially will go like some scalar charge, curly PL. times m to the power of l plus 1 over r to l plus 1 times Legendre polynomials times higher order 1 over r corrections. And this is the explicit form for the monopole scalar charge. And this is leading order and spin for the L equal 2 scalar charge. So we actually have the full, or he actually has the full solution, but would be a bit long to write it down here, just to give you an idea of what it would look like. OK, so much about the theory. And now, as I promised in the beginning, I want to show you some new results where we looked at black hole binaries in this theory. So what we did, using this up to first order and alpha prescription, is that the background, because the background is still GR, we essentially could model just the standard GR black hole binary, not one of the events that were observed. So we really did just some preliminary test where we took an equal mass black hole binary, non-spinning, as a fairly small separation of plus minus 3m, and let it evolve. So essentially what will happen that you will have of the order of 3-4 orbits before merger, the merger of the two black holes.
That is what was observed.
You had more orbits in DW.
Oh, yeah. But
so that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, so no, what I was trying to say.
Equal mass, non-spinning.
Yeah. But I think what would be more interesting, and I will show you in the next slide why, is to really start with the larger separation. So what I meant is, okay, we just started with a small separation. It was essentially a test run to see whether that works at all.
Right, three orbits is not very far away from eight orbits.
Yeah. But exactly. But so that's essentially the model. And what I want to show you here in a small animation is the evolution of the scalar field in that background. So remember, essentially, our scalar field is prescribed by this equation. And I'm showing you the equatorial plane here. So it's a xy plane. The binary will in the background will sit here in the middle, and I'm starting with zero scalar field. So there's no scalar here in the system present initially. But what you will see is that let me stop and make that a bit larger. Sorry. Let me just increase that. Yeah. Okay, good. So, sorry about that. Yeah, so what you will see, and probably already saw a little bit, is that scalar hair develops very quickly around the black holes. And it's essentially dominated by this monopole term. And now we are getting close to the last orbit and in spiral, and you see a burst of radiation at this stage, which is essentially a quadrupole radiation that's transmitted outwards and that is falling off. And then as in the background space-time settles down just to a Kerr black hole with a spin of about 0.7, the scalar field settles down to the hairy profile that we know from these analytic solutions that I presented in the previous slide. So let me just let this video finish. So again, we find this burst of radiation just before and after the merger. And I have two more slides for results, if you bear with me. That I want to show, which is essentially showing a few things about this animation in more detail. So what we have here is L equal M equal 2 mode of the scalar field rescaled by the radius, the L equal M equal 4 mode of the scalar field rescaled by the radius. And just as comparison, this is the quadrupole mode of the Newman-Penrose scalar that encodes the gravitational radiation of our background space-time. So you see that the merger, and the time is time minus extraction radius because I measured the waves at a fixed radius of 40 m. And I also cut off the junk radiation that is non-physical and just a numerical artifact. So what we see here, I'm not sure how well it's visible. I put in a line here indicating where the merger happens. And I think what is interesting and maybe even a bit surprising is that we see the emission, the burst of scalar radiation even before the merger. And let me just say that so Leo Stein and company, they looked at essentially a similar setup, but for Schoen-Simons gravity, where your correction is parity violating. And they saw some very similar effects. And I think they also still don't understand really where it's coming from. So it must come from the late in-spiral behavior of the background. gives this burst and then dies down to zero again. So, which I think is very interesting, and I think we also expected to see it in different modes, so we went and checked. But these are the modes that are excited, so L equal M even modes is that what we see. And the other thing that we have seen and which was most prominent in this animation is the monopole mode, and here I rescaled it by a factor of R, and a bit less prominent, the L equal to M equal zero mode, rescaled here by the factor R to the 3, which would give a constant at late times. So what you see is the development of this, these modes in the beginning, sourced by the individual black holes, and after the merger, it settles down to the values that you would expect precisely for a rotating black hole with a spin of about 0.7. So this is nice and consistent. I think what was more surprising was having this burst of scalar radiation even before merger. And then, well, it was nicely settling down at late times. So let me just conclude. And if you give me half a minute, I will just go through what we have learned today and what you should take home, is that aside from having exotic objects, I think if you want to look for a theory of quantum gravity, it's probably unavoidable that GR gets modified at some scale. And maybe we will be able to look for that using compact objects. So they may be unique probes, really, to test the strong gravity regime. And here I focused on a very particular theory, the reason being that I wanted, or that I tried to put it on a computer, and there I need to tell the computer which equations to evolve in a 3+1 system. And what I've shown you in the last two slides is that we, for the first time, studied binaries in an effective field theory approach in this model, and that we found this interesting burst of scalar radiation, and at late times it would just settle down to the Kerr solution that you know in these models. So, of course, there are many questions that you want to answer, and this is really just the first attempt. So, of course, if you want to understand how the space-time itself is modified and what gravitational radiation, the modified gravitational radiation really is, we need to go to second order in this expansion parameter, which is probably a bit more involved, but should conceptually be possible. Then we are still thinking about whether or not there is a way to model the full theory by using a different formulation or a different rewriting of the PDE system. And so that's also ongoing work where we just want to check and make sure whether or not we can use that approach. And then, of course, in the long run, what we really want to do is to understand or see, can we make waveform predictions, template predictions, that then people like the LIGO collaboration or in the future LISA can use to really look for, to really have templates to look for modifications of GR. So, thank you.
Yes. I have a comment or rather an objection on the where you put the question mark on the LIGO results. So at least for the first detection that you show here, that the merger part of the result is bang in the middle of our sensitivity band. So that's the part of the waveform that we are most sure about. And we actually do parameterize our waveforms in terms of some phenomenological parameters. I mean, it's true that they are phenomenological parameters, so it's difficult to map them to some underlying theoretical parameters, but those phenomenological parameters are a full independent set of parameters that characterize the waveform, and we have placed very good constraints on these parameters.
I know, I understand, but what I'm just emphasizing is that, yes, you do have these parameterized models, but all the calibrations you have, be it EOB, be it parameterized post-Newtonian, the calibrations for the merger regime come from GR. And all I'm saying is that we should start looking at trying to construct deviations thereof, because otherwise you will miss something, even though your signal is strongest there. So it's not a criticism of how the analysis was done. It was more, please be aware that there may be something that we are missing or misinterpreting. Yeah. By not knowing what there is.
If there are parameters that depart from general relativity, they have to like they have to construct themselves in a waveform that does match the merger,
right,
the
right.
merger part of the
waveform. Right, right, right. And I mean, in this case, especially the GW15 or 914, the in-spiral part was very short. So even though you did the consistency checks, is a question: do we fully trust them, or is there something that we just have to look for it? I mean, it may be maximally boring. I'm not saying it cannot be, but unless we check, we don't know.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah, so you had enough.
Do you have an estimate for how much energy is radiated away in this scalar?
Not yet.
I totally agree with Rajasman. And one of the things that we check is whether the energy at the beginning is matching the energy at the end.
Yeah. So
if you're having a burst of radiation that's going away.
Yeah. Not yet. And actually, one of the things that happens if you take this decoupling approach is that the coupling constant, in fact, scales out completely. And so I haven't, as I said, so I got the results basically Monday. I haven't computed the radiated energy for that. And also, how you rescale it and compare it to your gravitational energy is something I need to sit down and just do it.
You're just going to get an upper limit and upper GPS square.
Yeah. No, but I mean, there's a question of, how much energy is radiated. I just didn't do the computation. But of course, you're right. That's something that we need to check. And if it's very small, then you probably don't see it. Yeah, so
last question.
Yeah. Sorry, I've got two, but they're very short. What is the polarization of your scalar radiation? Is it a breathing mode or what?
Let me see. So, I mean, it's not the gravity.
Cross and plus, right?
No, I mean, and it's not. So, what you're talking about is probably the gravitational wave polarization that you would get from having the scalar field, which is something that we haven't looked at. So, that's why I was saying. So, at the moment, we have it to first order in the coupling constant, which means that we don't have any corrections to the metric yet. So, you would have to go to next order.
And the other thing, also very short, since you initially have no scalar field at all, but ultimately you have scalar radiation, so that energy must come out of something. The only possible source, I assume, is to accelerate the in-spiral.
That's probably what, exactly. So that's what I would assume. So I would expect a phase shift.
You haven't compared, because it's very fresh, you haven't compared it with the vacuum case yet, I assume. Or
no, that's why I'm... Out. So, okay, so let me try to make this argument once more. If you give me 1 minute. So the approach that we took was not using the full theory, because what we have not established yet is whether or not it gives a well-posed system of partial differential equations if we use a standard BSSN system. So instead, we did an expansion in this coupling parameter. So to zero's order, we essentially just have GR, no deviation. To first order, the space-time is still GR, but the scalar field is sourced by that. So we do have a scalar field to first order. So there's no deviation in the space-time metric. And that's where all the way we went to. So that's why I cannot give you an answer to your question. So if you go to second order,
probably factor in a higher one.
So you would get some modification here. Okay, so we went up to here, so that's why I cannot give a comparison to what you're saying. At the moment, we just know.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
That question came out of your time, so.
Okay.
Let's thank Helvi again.